With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make The Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two. P1 Jesse says, I bought candy last night for Halloween. Made sure to grab a bag that had Almond Joys in it.
When is Halloween? Wait, like 2 weeks away from Halloween?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks. 2 weeks from yesterday.
2 weeks. Oh, we got a Thursday night Halloween this
Thursday
year.
Thursday night Halloween.
Are you sure it's Thursday, not Friday?
I am positive it is okay. Thursday.
Huh? Yeah, you're right, because that would be 14.
The Monster Mash.
And the Monster Mash.
Yes.
Are we going to play a lot of Halloween songs?
If you want to put them in, go for it. I'm not a huge Halloween guy, so that's up to
There's
you guys.
There's nothing worse than a high school football game broadcast on Halloween.
Oh,
it's just
yeah.
a gong show.
Oh, yeah. Which we'll get next year, unless next year is a leap year. But I'm assuming next year will be a...
2020? 2020 is a leap year.
Oh, so will it jump to a Saturday then?
Let's hope so.
Okay.
You do know that 1 year, way down the road, you're going to be 70 still calling high school games, and there's going to be a school...
Look, I love going out there every Friday night with
the
guys.
No. You're going to be retired, but you're going to volunteer to do it. You're like, you know what? I still got that itch. And
I'll
you're going to go
public address.
No, you're going to go and a high school and it's going to become national news. A high school is going to demand that they get to play in their costumes. We'll wear our pads, but I got a vampire outfit that's legit. I can already see that happening 2045 or something.
I kind of want to go next time he calls a Halloween game, just get drunk and heckle him. Add the gong show.
It's for God!
Yell up to him in the booth.
Well,
that'll be the night we do the park roast.
Yeah, we'll get that one for a Halloween game.
That'd be very fitting, actually.
Back in my prime. Break out the old Letterman jacket.
All right, Kirk Cragthrope covers the Utah Utes for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's going to join us at 1:30. We'll talk about that big Utah-Arizona State game. I'm looking forward to that one.
Why is that line 13.5?
I've got a parking lot almost fight at my daughter's elementary school from Ooh. This morning story that I got to tell you.
Okay, parent
Between
on parent?
Kids or parents?
Parents.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Loud.
Nice.
Loud.
Thought we're going to get a little, you know, 6-7-year-old girl.
No. Somebody would just pick them up, take them away.
Yeah. Legs are flailing in the air.
You guys don't even know what fighting is. Just go this way. So we'll get to all of that crunch time as well. But I wanted to kick off the second hour. We talked all Dusky
Huskies.
I called them the Duskies.
You can't do that, man. Easy Brock.
Weird.
Was it Jacob Eason playing for Oregon, too? Get the hell out of here.
Is that what we'll call the trophy that gets made?
The Dusky Trophy?
The Dusky Trophy.
Oh, God, please, no.
Watch Jacob Herbert play football tomorrow.
Yeah, he's going to be good.
We talked all about that in hour number one. We had Anthony Newman. Anthony Newman was really good today. Gave some insight on the matchup. But I want to start with the NFL. Earl Thomas is making his illustrious return to Seattle after being a longtime Legion of Boom, a face of a franchise, a leader in the locker room. And the last time you saw Earl Thomas with the Seahawks, he was being carted off in Arizona with a middle finger to Pete Carroll in the Seahawks bench because he wanted more money. He wasn't getting the contract. He came back from a holdout. He played anyway. And I want to say it was a game or two into his return. He suffers a massive injury. He's out for the season. He's now in Baltimore. The Ravens come to Seattle. I think it's a very interesting dynamic of not only having a guy like that return who helped you win a Super Bowl, was the best of his position for a handful of years.
Dominant.
He's coming back, and there's a bit of a grudge. I mean, he's carted off with a middle finger to Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll was asked about that, the middle finger to him, And I thought his answer was very interesting.
Did your relationship change with him at all when he had the finger at Arizona on the card?
I haven't seen him much since then, you know. I think it probably, you know, obviously he was upset, you know, and so, but, you know, my heart's pretty big, pretty wide open to these guys from the time we spend together and all the stuff that we do. It's way more important than something that happens, some gesture or some statement or, you know, there's a lot of chances I could have come back to stuff guys have said when they leave, you know, and I kind of have a space for them to be themselves and how they do it and how they handle it. I'm going to love them anyway.
You know, I heard this clip yesterday and my instant thought was, I've never really rooted for a lot of Pete Carroll teams in my life. I didn't really root for USC outside of the championship games because I wanted the Pac-10 to do well. And then I've never rooted for the Seahawks. You know what my conclusion is on Pete Carroll is Pete Carroll is a big picture guy.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody is. It's not easy to watch somebody do something to you in the spotlight and react positively to it. And I think that answer right there sums up him really well. I mean, this is a guy that didn't get a fair shake in New England, and it, you know, the Jet thing didn't always go as well either as he wanted to, but he remains as a head coach figure, and he parlays that into USC.
Right.
He recruits big picture. He gets these guys to come in. He sees what's on the horizon with Reggie Bush and the incident. Again, big picture. What does he do? He jumps from USC and he takes a Seattle opportunity, thinking, I can still do this. I'm in the NFL. I know what it's like to do it. He's a big picture guy. He knows that in 15 years, all these dudes are going to be retired. They're going to be older. They're going to be giving their opinions on different media outlets, on players. And he also knows there's going to be moments where he's going to see them and they're going to get trotted back out to Seattle, and it'll be a come back out to midfield standing ovation moment. And he knows by taking this direction, this is the best approach. This is how you get the picture. This is how you, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, all those dudes get into one picture versus allowing the middle finger to him to be held within and hold that grudge and go, no, you know, I don't care about Earl Thomas anymore.
Right.
Pete
right.
Carroll's a big thinker. He's a big picture guy. And I've always appreciated that about him.
Yeah, it's very easy, I think, in that moment to be petty and to be upset and to be angered by what Earl Thomas did in the moment. But this is what makes Pete Carroll, to me, a great coach, is he allows, and he highlighted it there in the quote, he allows players to be themselves. He allows them to wear their emotions on their sleeves. And you can't knock it because he won national championships at USC doing it, and he's won a Super Bowl in Seattle doing it. He's been to two Super Bowls. He allows guys to speak their mind and to be themselves and to let their personalities out. And that's why players love, for the most part, playing for him. He's a great player's coach. That's what we've always known about him. And so I think when you allow your players to have that empowerment in terms of speaking their mind and showing their emotions, when it turns on you, you can't be upset about it, because that's all Earl Thomas was doing. And he allowed Earl Thomas to be himself and share his personality before that. So when he turns his middle finger on him, he understands this is just a byproduct of that. And this is a tough situation, I think, for everybody. It was a tough situation for everybody to be in, because you had in the moment Earl Thomas holding out, didn't want to play, wanted a new contract. He didn't get it. And I thought Bobby Wagner had a great quote on this, basically saying, like, it was a lose-lose situation for Earl. If he doesn't show up, then he's not a team guy and he doesn't care about winning and everybody was killing him for it. But if he does show up and he gets hurt, then he potentially risks losing money down the road, and it's a detriment to himself and to his family. It was a lose-lose situation for him to be in, and unfortunately the worst thing out of it happened. I would hope for Earl Thomas's sake that he would be willing, as time goes on, to move on from that in the slight, because he still ended up getting a decent sized contract in free agency, and he's playing in Baltimore and they're having a good year and they're probably going to go on to win the division based on the pace that we're seeing right now. But it was a tough moment, I think, for everybody involved. I tip a hat to Pete Carroll for letting bygones be bygones and not holding a grudge. As you're mentioning, I think this is going to be something they're going to revisit. That is a legendary moment in Seahawks history. That's the first Super Bowl championship team, and they're going to be enshrined into the Ring of Honor and do all that stuff down the road. Don't hold a grudge against these guys, and they're both eventually going to get over it.
I saw a thing from a good friend of the show, beat writer. Why am I just blanking?
Chris Crabtree?
No.
Beat writer. Bob Condotta? No.
ESPN. Brady Henderson.
Brady Henderson.
I just saw a thing from him about coming back, and Earl Thomas, I think, had a line something to the effect of, I've absolutely thought about it. And I think he's also being honest, too, of there's going to be a lot of emotions when he runs onto that field,
mm-hmm,
from the visiting aspect. And I don't know what the Seahawks have planned for it, whether it's pregame, whether it's in the middle of the game. I hope there's some moment in there where they at least say his name loudly and allow him to have some form of reception, even if it only lasts about 10 seconds. Guys like that matter.
Just put him on the Jumbotron in the pregame warm-ups, just something.
You know, Russell gets a lot of the attention, and he deserves it. Marshawn got a lot of the attention, and he deserves it. Pete Carroll, obviously. Earl Thomas was always kind of a quiet guy. You know, he wasn't a loud Richard Sherman type. He reminded me of, you know, he was the best at his position, but him and guys like Wagner. Wagner wasn't always very vocal. KJ Wright's not very vocal. You had guys on there. Cam Chancellor didn't talk a whole lot. I think those guys matter as much as anybody else. And I always feel with franchises, when you have a longtime player that helped you get past a low point and propped you up to winning a Super Bowl and coming within a yard of being back-to-back champions, I think those guys always need and deserve that kind of hero's welcome of thank you for all you did. You meant so much to the team. You made so many big plays. Without you, we don't win it. Because that's a fact. They just don't. I think a lot of those guys you can point to. Cam Chancellor, did they win it? No. Everybody was terrified of Cam Chancellor.
It was a great combination of guys on defense.
Yeah, him and Earl Thomas were one of the best complementary strong safety, free safety types I think the league's almost ever seen. And so I'm looking forward not only to the football game, because Seattle tends to play with their opponent and not have these breakaway games, and maybe they do this weekend, but I think there's going to be a great football game between two good teams. And I also want to see that return. I'm not even a Seahawks fan, but I love that stuff as a sports fan, to see those moments.
There's emotions involved, and I would hope, and I think the Seahawks fans will handle it right. I hope there's no booze. There shouldn't be. You don't hold anything against the guy. He was a free agent. He left. He wanted a new contract, and he wanted to stay in Seattle, but they didn't give him the deal, so he moved on. There's a good piece on ESPN about how it all unfolded, too, about how he was close. He was on a plane with Andy Reid, and he thought he was going to go to the Chiefs, and that was going to be his destination. But then kind of overnight, Cleveland ended up trading for Odell Beckham Jr., and you have all of a sudden Jarvis Landry and Beckham in the same division, and the Ravens are sitting there saying, whoa, 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 we need to cover safety to help us out going against those guys. So they came out of nowhere, and he ended up getting more guaranteed money than any safety in the history of the NFL. So it worked out for all sides. Seattle's having a good year. He's getting paid. His numbers are improving as the season's gone on. I think Pro Football Focus ranks him in the top 10 in cover safety. So you imagine there was going to be some shaking off of the dust and getting that leg to feel confident, or feeling confident in the leg again, if you will. And he's clearly getting there slowly but surely. I think no matter if you're a fan or not of the team, we've all been through that as a fan in our own situations on our own teams. When a guy comes back for the first time, or a legendary player in the organization eventually returns and you get a chance to honor them for the first time. And I think those are always really cool moments to see.
Sometimes they're not great, though, because you're like, why are they still playing?
Sure, when they're past their prime, or they're hanging on too long.
That's when it's not fun. Yeah. It's like, okay, we get to thank them, and that's cool. Remember Brett Favre, though? He didn't get a hero's welcome.
He did not.
I remember watching him march into the purple and gold into Lambeau, and boy, that was loud. A lot of boos. Not even for Brett Favre.
And that's where I hope. I think it's different because it's not a divisional rival. Like, if he had, maybe Richard Sherman was different. I can't remember how Seahawks fans handled that his first time there last year, but that's a similar
one. Did he go
one.
There, or did he hurt himself before?
Well, did Richard Sherman get hurt last year? I thought he played. I thought he was decent.
Oh, yeah, you're
healthy.
Right. It was a return from an injury.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Return from an injury. Yeah. So I think he went and played. I don't know if they booed him or not, but that's a little different because you're playing for a divisional rival. I just, like, no matter who you're playing, I just hope. We're playing for. He deserves a little bit of credit and a loud ovation. Just give him some respect for what he did for the organization.
Hey, somebody, this is a good question. Where does the Legion of Boom rank among the best units you've ever seen play in the NFL?
In modern NFL, I can't think of a better second. There maybe have been better defenses, but when you think of just the secondary.
But I think of them, I put them in the same category. I don't think this is a stretch. They were dominant. And I would honestly put them, they didn't achieve as much. You know, they're like the steel curtain to me. It's the same thing to me. You want to label these great defensive unit teams, whatever. Great. Like the Ravens. What's the Ravens thing? The 2000 Ravens.
Did they have a name?
I just think they're just dominant, right?
Yeah, you just remember them for winning the Super Bowl.
I put all those into like the same category. Some of the best ever.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the Legion of Boom was. And I hope Seahawks fan, and I think they will, largely shows him, even briefly, that they appreciated everything you did. Hey, what happened yesterday in the Pac-12? We'll talk about Oregon State and Cal, and dive into some other Pac-12 things next on The Fan. I almost watched two soccer moms fight in my daughter's school parking lot this morning. That was pretty cool.
What was the fight over?
So it's a jogathon at their elementary school.
Well, one of those like raise money for the arts kind of thing.
Yeah, and they did it in parking lot because their schoolyard, their recess area, was muddy and wet. So they were running in the parking lot, so they cut off the parking lot. You had to drive around these cones to do drop-offs. I identified this right away. I just wanted to drive as close to the cone going around to drop my daughter off.
Sure.
And then I was going to reverse and go back out the same way. A mom saw me do that. She followed me and then realized she couldn't get through. She then starts screaming at the other moms who are volunteering their time.
Uh-oh.
To set this thing up and help. And by the way, I know all these moms, they all have full-time jobs.
Yeah, so they're taking some time out of their day and their job to go help at the school.
And this lady's just like, can I get through? And this other mom that I know, we're friends, I saw her respond and she goes, no, you just got to reverse and you got to get out. And I had put my car in reverse. And the mom behind me did not care. The mom behind me is like, this is bull. You guys need to move those cones now because there's one-way traffic and I'm not backing up. How do you want me to get out of here? And my friend, she goes, well, I don't really care what you do, but you're not going through here.
Yeah.
That set the woman off. She's then dropping F-bombs out of her car.
Classy.
She's telling her that she's just calling names to the other lady. And I know this mom. This mom would fight somebody.
Yeah.
And she knew in a school setting it was not the right thing to do.
Not appropriate.
And she took a shot at the woman's makeup. The woman. The woman almost got out of the car. By the way, I'm still sitting.
Jerry.
I know.
Jerry.
And I'm in the middle of it watching this go back and forth. And I'm like, this is incredible entertainment.
In a school parking lot. Yep. Why are people so angry?
Oh, and her son was in the car with her. And
oh,
I just,
nice.
I looked at him and I said, oh, buddy, I feel for you, man.
You poor kid, man. What a great role model that mom is, getting all angry because she can't get out of the parking lot.
By the way, she got out A-okay. She reversed. There were no cars coming. She got out. Not a problem at all.
What a coincidence. Huh?
Like, why do people need to take it there?
I had one of those the other day. I was going home from work, coming across the Selwood Bridge.
Yeah.
You know, you have those two lanes and they eventually merge into one. And it's pretty normal. It's like a zipper. You know, one car goes, the other car goes. Like, we all know how to merge, right?
Sure.
Pretty driving 101. And there was a guy that was in front of me in the left lane, and he was the car in front of me. He refused to allow the other person to merge. So they're just kind of going, imagining like, all right, at some point we're like halfway over the bridge. Now it's time to merge. And everybody's just kind of crawling along. He would not. So he's like tailgating in front of the car in front of him, not letting the other person in. The other person's like looking at him like, what? Like, really? Like, you're not going to let me in? And they start flipping each other off, and he slammed on his brakes to try to get him to run into the back of him. It's like, really? The middle of the Selwood Bridge, we're going to do this? Like, can we just get over the bridge, merge? It's not that big of a deal, people.
You know what I would do if I was the car that was being tailgated? I identify this. I stop. I put my arm out the window, and I tell the car in the other lane, just come in front of me.
Yeah, you go ahead, buddy.
And then I let that car go ahead, and that pisses the guy behind me off more, and I'm getting a kick out of it.
His head's exploding behind you.
We don't need to act irrationally, people. It can be calm, a lot of sense being made of what to do in the right moments. You don't need to be idiots.
Just chill out. We don't need to fight parents at schools, all right?
But speaking of being idiots.
Okay, what do you got?
Stanford.
What the hell happened, man?
I mean, I know they had a third-string quarterback that's a redshirt freshman and probably will never play another snap as a quarterback, but...
He was really bad.
You got housed by UCLA last night. What was that?
Is there not a more perfect example of what the hell is up with the Pac-12 than last night? Like, I guess if you told me yesterday, hey, UCLA's going to find a way to win this game, Stanford's playing with a third-string quarterback, he's not very good... Say, all right, I don't see it, but all right, it's a Pac-12. It's a little bit of weird. It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to get dominated. Like, outside of the punt block for the touchdown that Stanford had early in that game, they didn't score until garbage time. Without that, the game would have been, what, 34-7 or 34-9, whatever the hell it was,
yeesh,
late in the fourth quarter. I mean, they were smoked from start to finish, and that is a Stanford team that seemingly was finding their way. They went up to Corvallis, and they got a win. They dominated Washington at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and they're coming off a bye. I know UCLA was coming off a bye as well, but they seemingly were getting things figured out. Maybe it's just a Jack West problem, but that doesn't explain how UCLA, which, what a great name
Jack
that is.
Jack West.
I know, what a great name. That does not explain, though, how UCLA was able to score 34 points. What did Washington score against that defense? 13? Wasn't that game like 23-13?
13, yeah, 23-13.
They held Washington's offense to 13 points at home, and then Chip Kelly and UCLA went in there and poured a 34 spot on them.
So combined, Stanford's defense allowed 34 points against Oregon and Washington. And UCLA scored 34 points by themselves last night.
How is
night.
That possible? And they,
I don't know.
If I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure they corralled the Washington rush offense a little bit. Kelly went in there and ran for a buck 76 on him.
He did. Yeah, he did exactly what every other team playing playing Stanford has tried to do and hasn't necessarily been able to do.
Like what?
Oregon didn't have a running running attack.
Oregon, I think rushing totals were like 80 yards.
Washington was terrible. And then UCLA just comes in. Like, I know it's a third string quarterback.
But they didn't have a third string quarterback playing middle linebacker for them.
Right.
Okay?
I know. That's the thing.
263 yards on the ground. 6.5 yards a carry, too.
I'm so glad that I basically ended the show yesterday saying Chip Kelly doesn't care anymore and he sucks. And then they won by almost 21 points. But we said that line was weird. Something funky was going on. We still took Stanford. But nonetheless, UCLA gets a win. They're now 2-5 on the season.
Somebody had a great tweet. I can't remember who it was last night, but it was essentially using both these teams as an example of saying, can you name two programs who have had weirder seasons than Stanford and UCLA?
I think of anybody in the conference, it's them.
Like UCLA coming back from down 32 against Washington State, which just would never happen again if you played that game 100 times.
Somebody says UCLA only half game out of first place in the
South.
They
are.
Right now.
They are only a half game. They have two conference losses.
Just stop. They suck. No, they're not going to get there. I know it's a good observation. They're not going to get there.
They have two more conference wins than Washington State does. Think about that for a second.
Well, one of them was against the Cougars.
It was. They beat the Cougars head-to-head. But like Stanford in some of their games of getting smoked back-to-back weeks and then kind of playing Oregon close, then they beat Washington. Then that happens. UCLA lost big at home to Oregon State, and then they go on the road and they house Stanford. It's a wild conference, man. It's a little schizophrenic.
What are we thinking of Colorado-Washington State this week? And I know we're going to get to all these games for our Pac-12 picks, but that's against the spread stuff. What is your just general thought right now? This is almost a 2-touchdown spread against Colorado, Washington State hosting.
It feels like a big line to me, predominantly because I don't trust Washington State's defense. Now, I think Washington State got it going on offense last week. Arizona State's got a good D, and they went in, scored 34, something like that. I think the final was like 38-34 in that game, or 37-34. So they got it going on that side of the football, and I think they will be able to. Colorado has an atrocious defense. Like we saw that on Friday night. They can't stop anybody. So Wazoo's going to put up a lot of points. But I think we've also fooled ourselves from that Oregon-Colorado game into thinking that Colorado was inept on offense, and they're not. I mean, that's a team that coming into last week was putting up like 480 yards a game.
30 points a game.
Like they were moving it and scoring.
Or at least 30 in a game.
Sure, and they had LaVisca Chenault back in the lineup, who might be the best wide receiver in the conference. And I think the takeaway from that was like, man, they're really bad on offense. I just think Oregon's that good on defense. So Colorado's going to be able to move it on Washington State. This is a big challenge game for them. It's weird to continue to say, but it is true. At the halfway point of the season, Washington State remains the only conference team without a win in the Pac-12. And here is a great opportunity for one. Colorado's limping in a little bit. They can't stop a nosebleed on defense. You got some confidence going on offense. Like, this is a must-win for Washington State. Just to calm everybody down, you get back above 500, you go into Oregon the next week, a team that you beat in 4 years in a row with a little bit of confidence. They got to win this one at home.
I mean, if they lose to Colorado at home, they then go to Eugene.
Yep.
And then at Cal, Stanford, Stanford might have their quarterback back.
Stanford's weird, man. I don't.
That's a question mark.
Yeah. And Cal, don't forget, Cal gave him troubles last year.
They're going to annihilate Oregon State with that pass offense, I think, and then you're at Washington. So that's a loss. I mean, you're looking at some dangerous territory here. Sure. If they lose this one.
It's a must win. I don't know about that spread. Two touchdowns seems like I don't know if I'm confident enough to take Washington State minus 12.
Yeah, you don't want to overreact to Colorado's anemic offensive showing in Oregon's dominance, but Washington State still has the offense going, so it's just a matter of what they can end up doing. Mm-hmm. Arizona-USC, that's almost a 10-point spread, so that's another.
USC,
I don't have
show
any faith
something.
Arizona's going to win. But.
No, USC showed me something on the road last week. They almost pulled off a major upset.
That's a gutsy performance.
Now, I think USC's problem, though, has been consistency.
Right.
Can you go do it again next week? Can you put together back-to-back good performances? Because they should be able to handle Arizona at home.
Well, let's talk about the other big game in the conference. We talked about Oregon and Washington. Arizona State travels down to take on Utah. We'll talk with the beat writer of the Utah Utes, Kirk Cragthrope, and he joins us. He's the beat writer for the Salt Lake Tribune. He joins us next.
Welcome back in. 133. Hope your Fridays are going well. We got three games in college football this weekend that include matchups of ranked teams, and two of them happen to be in the Pac-12. We've talked a lot about Oregon and Washington today. The other one is happening in Salt Lake City as Arizona State is in town to take on the Utes in a big battle in the Pac-12 South. And joining us now to talk about it is Kurt Cragthorpe. You can give him a follow on Twitter, at TribKurt. He is a writer for the Salt Lake Tribune. Kurt, thanks so much for joining us here in Portland, man. We really appreciate it. I'll just dive in. Like, where's the feeling on this one? It's a big game, Pac-12 standings, obviously a lot at stake. How are Ute fans feeling going into this matchup against ASU?
I would say there's a lot of concern just because of recent history against the Sun Devils. The last 2 years, they've really been tough on Tyler Huntley, the Ute quarterback, literally ending his season with a broken collarbone last year and intercepting him four times here in Salt Lake in 2017. So, and historically, ASU is actually the team that in the Pac-12 South that Utah has had the most difficulty with in the 8 years of being in the Pac-12, this being the ninth. So, people know it's a big game, and they're a little leery about it. They're kind of skittish about the fact that Utes are favored by 13 points, for one thing.
Right. It seems like a very different feel right now between Duck fan. Like, I think Duck fan right now, because they're in control of the North, Washington has stumbled, Washington State has stumbled. In the South, I'm kind of surprised to hear that Utes fans still a little nervous. Their team had a really good showing against Washington State a few weeks ago. Big opportunity. They're going against a freshman quarterback in their place. At some point, a freshman's going to have a big mistake game. I don't know if it's this weekend, but I'm a little surprised to hear that you fans are still a little skittish or nervous.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is that they realize that under Herm Edwards, Arizona State hasn't lost a game in Pac-12 play by more than 7 points. So again, it's kind of a Utah thing to kind of not be happy with prosperity, I think. They do like this team a lot, and they're actually a little upset that Oregon Washington is on ABC and not this game. They're being relegated to the Pac-12 networks, but yeah, like I say, that they're just a little nervous just based on they were able to win the South last year, even though they lost Arizona State, and it's totally thanks to the Oregon Ducks beating ASU a couple weeks later. But yeah, I just think that recent history against ASU has people worried.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, Kurt. You just blew my mind with that stat that ASU has not lost a game under Herm Edwards by more than 7 in the Pac-12. That blew my mind. We're talking about Kurt Cragthorpe, covers the Utes for the Salt Lake Tribune, at TribKurt on Twitter. Go give him a follow. I think the thing about Utah that everybody questions, and it feels like it's almost every single season in the preseason and as the year goes on, is the offense. And you mentioned Huntley's issues against ASU in the last couple of years. Where's the feeling just around them offensively? We know how good they are on defense. I even feel like you know how good of a rushing attack they have with Zach Moss. But just the offense, the confidence, and Arizona State's got a good defense. How do they feel about just being able to get some points on the board and help that defense out this weekend?
Yeah, it's interesting how it's kind of evolved this season. And people for a decade or longer, like you say, have been worried about Utah's offense. But they have a lot of confidence in it as a fan base now. Andy Ludwig has come back as the offensive coordinator, and he's done a really good job with Huntley in particular and using a lot of lesser-known athletes around him to get some things done. They have a great running back, Zach Moss, but he's actually missed the equivalent of 2.5 games, either due to a shoulder injury that he suffered against USC, and also they've been way ahead like last week and against Oregon State and didn't play him in the second half at all.
Right.
And and Zach needs only 55 yards to become Utah's career rushing leader. And obviously people are confident that'll happen, but I go back to that game here 2 years ago when it was 30-3 late in the fourth quarter before Utah scored a meaningless touchdown. So,
right.
But yeah, Kyle Whittingham acknowledges that the Devils have kind of had their number, so they need to get that reversed.
Is this one of those where you look at the schedule a little bit, and it's hard to not play the schedule game at this point so deep into the season, but if they can win this game against Arizona State, you think of Cal. I know at Seattle is never going to be easy. UCLA, I know where they're at, but that just doesn't seem like they're very good. Arizona, Colorado. I mean, I know that loss against USC could hurt because USC is still 2-1 in conference play, but is this one of those, if they can get past Arizona State, maybe within that locker room, within that program, they're not overlooking anybody, but they do have that kind of air of confidence that, okay, we've gotten through a huge hurdle here and the schedule kind of lines up for them a little bit.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there because it is a nemesis historically, as we've discussed. I think what people have kind of done is like you say, we're in the media, we're allowed to look ahead, and people are kind of breaking down these remaining six games into 2-3-game segments, mm-hmm. with ASU, Cal, and Washington being much tougher than those last three. And so I think people do say that if by November 2nd the Utes could be 8-1, which would be 5-1 in the league, they'd be really in good shape. And I'm kind of the voice that keeps saying, wait a minute, I don't see USC losing a lot of games. They're probably going to lose to Oregon, but they're favored in just about every other game. So I'm keep reminding people that the Utes need more help than people may realize, mm-hmm. with the Trojans. But to your point, it does set up well if the Utes can get past tomorrow, and who knows, maybe even Arizona beats USC, and then everything's kind of righted in Utah's perspective.
Right, right. Well, we'll get you out on this one. Do you think they get it done tomorrow? Did they get the win? Big game, Pac-12 Network, as you mentioned, a lot of excitement around it. Does Utah pull it off?
I think they do, but it won't be nearly as easy as that 13-point line suggests.
Yeah, it's a big line, man. Herm's keeping all those games close. That's a great stat to keep in mind. Kurt Crabthorpe of the Salt Lake Tribune. Give him a follow on Twitter, @Trib. Kurt, thanks so much for the time here in Portland, man. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and we really appreciate it.
Okay, talk to you guys again. Thanks, Keith.
There you go. Kurt Crabthorpe talking about Utah and Arizona State. It is a big game. That stat blew my mind.
Now, hasn't lost by more than 7 points in a game.
Really blew my mind.
I'm not going to change my picks, but I'll just throw out there right now, if you're not finding a way to try to gamble on that matchup, I think you're missing a big opportunity. But look, the USC situation, I don't think they had any business losing to them. I know the whole cliche USC thing now is because they suck or are inconsistent is to say, well, USC's got as much talent as anybody.
Right.
Utah shouldn't have lost against them. They're a better team than USC. That loss right now, the schedule is kind of in their favor. They can get past.
Sorry.
Did I say something?
No, I apologize.
You okay?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Are you
sorry.
All right?
I'm so, yeah. Listeners are making me laugh. I know. They're making me laugh.
What are they making laugh about?
I just really loved his enthusiasm. He was a go-getter.
Our guest?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of passion.
Oh. All right, well. It was in the middle of actually a really good point. You're such a jerk.
It was a really good point. Please continue. Finish your point. It was a good point.
I remember.
It was something about USC. They look good.
Yeah,
Utah.
USC has the advantage on them because they have the one game on them now and the schedule.
No, I think your point is right on Utah. I mean, that's a game you look back on. And I think it's funny with Oregon and Utah, the teams that people are starting to narrow down
Lord,
on.
Oh, Lord, man.
I know.
Don't open the text machine.
People are starting to narrow down on Utah and Oregon, obviously, is in the driver's seat to win the North and the South right now. And they each have a game that they feel like they let it go.
Right, but here's the difference, though. Oregon's doesn't impact their
Pac-12
race.
It's
only impacts
game,
a potential playoff seeding, whereas Utah can win this weekend, but I also think USC's winning. So Utah's win's not going to matter because they're still going to be behind USC.
Very true.
Their schedule lines up for them. They still have a couple tough, like, you don't want to overlook Cal by any stretch. You're obviously going to have a really tough battle when you go to Seattle in a few weeks. But UCLA should be a win. Arizona should be a win. Colorado should be a win. It's really going to boil down to what USC does. And I'll need to take a look at USC's full schedule.
I got it right here in front of me. So they got Arizona this week, night game at home.
That should be a win.
Then they're at Colorado.
That should be a win.
Should be a win. Then they get Oregon at home on the 2nd.
We don't know.
Don't know about that one. Then they're at ASU. We don't know about that one. And then they close with Cal and UCLA.
It'd be very USC to lose two of those games, whereas Utah could potentially get through this one losing only one. But I guess that would still leave them tied, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so USC's 3-3, but two of their losses are non-conference. They lost the overtime game to BYU, and then they've lost two games by a field goal, both out of conference. BYU and Notre Dame each beat them by three.
Yeah, it's one thing for Oregon to end up losing that Auburn game. It's another for Utah to lose to USC because of obviously what we mentioned, the implications within the Pac-12.
You know, Kurt, he was very enthusiastic, and he might have swayed a Sprague and the Line pick for me.
I mean, I'm thinking about throwing it on there.
Like that, I'm thinking about it, though, and I'm going back over the last year and a half. Like, he hasn't.
But isn't the only concerning... look, these are very concerning things to bring up, though, to play devil's advocate against that stat.
Sure.
One, he's going to have a game where he eventually does lose by more than 7 points.
I mean, of course, yeah. It's not going to go on forever.
Two, true freshman quarterback going on the road to Rice Eccles. I know the kid's been okay.
He's a gamer, man.
He is a gamer. I like him, but that's a tough environment. And it three, is. Utah beat the living snot out of Washington State coming off their loss.
Very
so,
true. Very true.
I'm still probably going to lean Arizona State there, though, with what he said.
All right, there you go. Good talk around Utah and ASU.
Did he sound like he had low blood sugar? Somebody text that in, Swigard.
Yeah.
I have family members that have diabetes, and I kind of get what they're saying.
I had him. So he was on previewing Utah in the Dirty Poll, and I interviewed him out at the golf tournament because you Yahoos were both on vacation.
That's right.
Well, I was running a relay race. You're right.
I was winning a golf tournament.
You were on vacation.
Yeah.
What you choose to do on vacation is your own business, but you were on vacation.
I was working hard. Okay?
Kurt, man. Kurt's a good dude. It's good stuff.
Was it the same energy with you?
Yeah, it was the same.
Yeah.
Some people are better suited for writing. Some are better suited for talking. Some are better suited to look at. Others are not.
I'll at least give him this.
I understand my place in the media.
He was...
but he's been covering that team for
a long time. Yeah.
Long time.
He thinks about what he's going to say before he says
it. Yeah. He does.
And yes. I don't have that. I just say things that are stupid, and then I go, wait a minute, hold on. I'm a moron. He at least is kind of vetting the situation. Let's figure out what we're going to say here.
All right, good stuff.
A lot of listeners lose money on Scoreboard last night. Are they angry?
No, they're not angry.
No, nobody's angry.
Nobody's angry. It's more just, and by the way, guess who got back to me in the middle of the interview?
Yeah, Tom Hackett, our boy, the Australian
Tom
punter.
Hackett. Yeah, Tom Hackett here.
Let's talk something you're tough about. That was a terrible accent. I'm sorry. Okay, we'll make some Pac-12 picks coming up at the top of the hour.
Stop doing accents.
I know, I'm really bad at accents, and I like trying new accents and then just sounding really bad at them. We'll make our Pac-12 picks top of the hour.
You were the kid that would go home from school and go in his bedroom, shut the door, work on an accent, and get mad at himself when he wasn't good at it.
Come on, Andy, come on! Show up at school the next day, try it out in the cafeteria. Damn it! My British accent's no good. All right. We're also going to get into Oregon State Cal in the final hour. Well, Sprague and the Line, get your fake sponsors in. I have a feeling Kurt might be a couple of Sprague and the Line sponsors today, so get those in at 55305. Let's dive in. Can we briefly dive into some baseball stuff? Now, there was audio.
Wow, that's a hot take.
Why? What's a hot take?
It's Football Friday.
ALCS, bro. We could have the World Series matchup tonight.
I'm with you.
Can we make fun of Yankee fans together, please? Can we do that for a couple minutes?
I'm totally in on that.
Okay, we're going to make fun of Yankee fans. They're on the ropes. Astros went away from the World Series. Baseball stuff briefly on a Football Friday. Coming up next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, crunch time. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Where the trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. I was not at the Glorious House of Games
that
this morning.
Is 7-9.
You know what, Jeff? You got fired, so joke's on you. I'll be there this weekend, though. Maybe Sunday afternoon. Somebody did bring up a good point. We need to bring on our Atlanta bro.
Oh, Orlando Ledbetter.
To hype us back up.
Orlando.
Hey, guys, good to talk to you again on a Friday! You know, just get everybody going, man. Get everybody going.
If we called Orlando right now, do you think, one, he answers, and two, would he agree to just pop onto the radio show and talk about whatever we ask.
I think that needs to be like a 30-second bit of every show.
Just check randomly in with one of our favorites.
Randomly call him and say, hey, what are your thoughts on the Oregon-Washington game? Go. You know, I love Justin Herbert! Just starts yelling at you.
Was his voice that high?
No, it wasn't that high.
You might be right,
I'm not
though.
Good with voices, all right? What do you want from me here?
No, I want you to keep trying. You're going to nail one.
I am. I'm eventually going to get one down.
Your Gruden's pretty good until you keep going with it, and then it gets Dan Aykroyd-ish.
Let me tell you what, man. Yeah, and then it unravels from there. Pac-12 picks coming up top of the hour. ALCS was last night. Kind of a sad moment, actually. CC Sabathia at the end of that game, he felt something pop. I believe he said in his shoulder or something like that.
Yeah.
He had to walk out the field. So his career is done because he's retiring at the end of the season. And friend of the show, Joe Girardi, did you see him? He was on MLB Network last night and he started like breaking down crying.
He got real emotional when he talked about what CC meant to him and the Yankees. And
yeah, that was really unfortunate, man. He's been a great ball player. He made his debut. Somebody had a picture of him. Made his debut in 2001.
I know.
Wrap your head around that. Insane.
He started with Cleveland, right?
Cleveland. Came up with Cleveland. I think he was dealt to Milwaukee.
Are you going to remember him more as Cleveland or New York?
I will always remember him more Cleveland. Early
Me
CC.
Too, because his early stuff was filthy.
Yeah,
he wasn't great with the Yankees, obviously.
No, he helped them win a World Series in 2009 when he eventually came over.
He was also really good for the Brewers that one or two seasons he was there.
They got him for a postseason push one year, and they didn't win at all, but he was very good there as well. So that was a really sad moment out of the game last night if you watched towards the end. But really, I mean, the takeaway from last night's game was, man, did the Yankees unravel. So you started that game in the first inning. Tanaka gets him in the first, nothing, you know, no problem. You come up on the bottom of the first, they load the bases, and Greinke walks in a run.
Mm-hmm.
And just like that, it's 1-0, and you're kind of feeling everybody was on the Yankees last night on their money line. Greinke hadn't been good in the postseason. Tanaka had been the ace. Here we go. Walked in a run, but they let him off the hook early, and the Astros, a couple of three-run home runs later, I mean, they ran away from that thing. A couple of errors late in the game for the Yankees. It got so bad to the point that their fans just started hitting the exits in droves.
Like, yes, they did.
We're out of here.
Typical Yankee fan, never can hang around and watch your team fully lose a game. You've got to leave in the seventh or eighth inning because you know your team's down. What was it, 7-3?
It was 6-3 going into the eighth, and Gary Sanchez had just hit a two-run home run to make it 6-3.
Well, and then CeCe, by the way, while he was in there, I think he only ended up giving up one run. Right? 6-7?
Well, they booted a couple of balls behind him. Yeah,
sure.
He got two outs, but he I don't think any of them were earned. Ottavino came in, and he was a gas can again. Ottavino has been terrible for him in the playoffs. But hey, it's always fun to make fun of Yankee fans. They left early. We forgot to play this yesterday. So this was during game three. So the Astros went in there. Garrett Cole shut him down. Big win for Houston. This was a fan sitting like somewhere in the area behind home plate. You know, let's get people fired up.
What do they call that? The Legends Club or something? This is the high rent district.
I think they call it the let's take a nap for the afternoon club because everybody was just sitting on their hands. And here is a Yankee fan trying to rally everybody.
Everybody, we got to get up. We're playing Cole. This is the game right here. Get up. Let's go. I don't understand. I don't understand why you paid all these tickets if you don't want to win the game. I don't understand. Could it be me? Would it be me? It shall not be me. I will not sit two outs in the American League Championship Series.
Good luck.
Could be me, would be me. We need to pull that as a drop. The only thing that would have made it better is at the end if he just started like a solo Let's Go Yankees chant. Let's go Yankees! Like just all by himself.
Dude, he's the soccer bro in Love You Man.
Come on, everybody!
Shut up! He ends up fighting the other.
That was so good, man. That cracked me up. Yankee fan though,
is there anything worse than trying to be inspirational and realizing very quickly nobody cares that you're trying to be inspirational?
We've all been at games though too that are like not big games that you have that guy in your section. You just want to be like, shut up, dude. Like I remember going to a Blazer game one time. They're playing like the Suns. They're up by like 18 in the second quarter, and there's a guy. Let's go, everybody, get up! Come on! It's like, dude, no.
Well, no. Have you ever empowered a fan the wrong way? As I've seen this happen too. So when I went to that Dodger playoff game 2 years ago, there was a guy in our section. We were at the top in the 300 level by the foul pole. And there was a guy about four rows away from us. He was hammering beers in the first, just the second, the third, pounding the dirt. I think he honestly had like seven beers.
That's what I'm talking about.
By the seventh inning, it was 2-1 or something. It was kind of becoming a need some energy going.
Yeah.
This guy, the whole game while he was drinking, was that fan. He was, come on, Dodgers! Let's go, guys! Everybody get up! Nobody was participating. This guy, by the seventh inning, they showed him on the Jumbotron. His hoodie was over his head.
Uh-oh.
He passed out on his hands.
No.
He flat out. His friends tapped him. He wouldn't move.
Out like a light.
Eventually, the crowd started cheering.
Like, started slow clapping for him. Yeah.
And all he woke up, and he looked, and he saw himself on the Jumbotron, and everybody was like, come on. And he was like, yeah! He
ripped his head.
Let's go! He did it the rest of the game, and eventually he almost got in a fight because he became too annoying.
He then went over the top.
We empowered
again.
Him too much to be the motivating guy, and it went to his head.
It is unfortunate. Like, and somebody said, did you see the stands in Houston down 6-0? Every fan base does it. There's no doubt about that. People leave early at every place. I think the unfortunate part is...
That's from a Yankee fan, by the way.
It for sure is from a Yankee fan. It is valid, though, that a lot of different fan bases do that. The unfortunate part, though, when I watch Yankee games now and big moments, old Yankee Stadium used to have, like, the best atmosphere.
It was special.
Right? Like,
it
just
was.
A game in October, old Yankee Stadium, that place was just crumbling apart, but you could do the history there, and it was loud, and everybody was standing the whole time. And this happens all over sports when you get these new corporate ballparks and corporate stadiums. Foxborough is a prime example of this, like in New England.
I think Foxborough has sucked.
Look at San Francisco. San Francisco builds this nice, swanky new stadium in Santa Clara. They don't have a home field advantage anymore, but the old stick used to be a dump, but it was the stick and the moments that happened there. And it's unfortunate, like just watching that game last night, you pan around, even in big moments in that game, like the fifth inning, and they'll show the seats behind home plate, and half of them are empty.
But how many years, I think you're hitting the nail right on the head, but how many years does a new stadium have to go before it turns into the special dump, right? Like the Yankees, when they built that stadium, sure. Obviously a long ass time ago.
Like in 1910, right. Whatever the hell it was.
You had some hoity-toity people going to it, and eventually
there's no doubt.
It opens up a little more for people that necessarily can't afford the new stadium ticket prices. Candlestick Park was, at some point, it's going to become the older special place.
What I think has to happen is a lot of those places, the Mariners did it, right behind home plate is where they sold their exclusive club, and you go somewhere in the bowels and you get a buffet.
A great meal.
All that sort of stuff, but it costs, $250 to $600 a game, depending on what market you're in. I think there'll be enough teams' PR departments that keep seeing that on television and say, hey, can we move those people somewhere else?
Yeah, put them down the first baseline or something.
Fans who want to be here, yes, those are premium seats. We got to charge them. But let's quit with all the extra nonsense find the fans that want to be there. Now, to the Dodgers' credit, that group back there, that's usually pretty full. However, they do their club thing. There's a few people I see. I mean, I watched 140 Dodger games this year. And there's
Mary Hart? Isn't she always back there? Isn't what her name is?
She's there. But there's one guy that sits right behind the ump that looks like Leon Panetta. And I can't figure out who he is.
I saw Maverick Carter at a Dodger game.
Is Larry King still alive?
He hasn't been at one, I don't think.
Yeah,
he hasn't
been at one in the playoffs.
He usually sits up in the lows. She doesn't usually sit right behind home plate.
Okay.
He just got divorced for the 18th time.
Yeah, oh, poor Larry.
Didn't want to give her the money.
Makes sense, man. Well, there you go. So the Yankees, they're on the brink. Do they win today? Is it over today?
I think it's over.
No, I think the Yankees, I told you, I think it's going six. I think the Yankees win today.
You think Paxton shows up today?
Sure.
Who is it? Paxton
Verlander
today? Got to be Verlander Cole back-to-back days now.
That's not ideal.
Going on scoreboard with that action?
I'll probably get some good odds in the Yankees' favor.
All right, there you go. Some hot baseball stuff. I apologize. I know it's a football Friday.
Jason in Milwaukee went, old man, get off my lawn. Get back to football.
Okay, we'll get back to football. I apologize. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where the trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. Locally owned and operated with 6 locations to serve you. Final hour. Here we go. Oregon State and Cal. We haven't talked much about that game. What do we expect? expect about the Beavs this weekend. We'll get into that. We got a Sprague the Line coming up at 2:30. So get your fake sponsors in at 55305. We will start, though, with the Pac-12 picks against the spread. We are all already 0-for-1 going into the weekend. How are we going to do the rest of the picks? We'll pick those games coming up. Start the final hour next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.